This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in Vancouver. Super excited for today's guest. We've got Trevor Hargreaves. He's the Senior VP of Government Relations, Marketing, and Communications at BCREA, or the British Columbia Real Estate Association. We also have had Trevor on before. He talks a lot. He's well-rounded. He can talk about anything housing, but he's particularly good when it comes to government and when it comes to policy in the province.
Absolutely. And we're talking BC budget, right? BC budget came out last week. What is it? What does it mean? Just how bad was it, Adam? That's what we get to this week. And Trevor has a lot of thoughts. And we don't pull any punches either. This is a good one. Great conversation, as always, with a past guest fan favorite. That's for sure.
This is a wild deficit. I can't believe it.
It's funny. offline, we said, and it is worth pointing out, this was after the conversation. My general sense is this is a government out of ideas. Like, they're in this paper bag that they can't fight their way out of, and they're doubling down on some of the policies that the genesis started in 2017, and there's not a lot of new, and just a lot more of trying to extract more water from a stone, Adam.
Yeah, no kidding. And it feels that way. So tons of things to cover today, which is why we brought Trevor on the show. Matt, before we get to that, though, of course, we've got this segment that remains nameless.
We do. You know what? This one this week, the question comes from Wendy Waters, past guest fan favorite. I follow Wendy on LinkedIn, where she's
big fan,
always insightful. So I just stole this straight from a post of Wendy's. So shout out to her. It's worth noting she started the post with, as British Columbians struggle to make sense of the budget this week. So we should have probably asked Wendy also to come on, because she could make sense of it. But here's the question, Adam. Everybody's been talking about the ballooning government service in BC over the last decade. Here's the question. For every 1,000 people this is as of 2024, for every 1,000 people in British Columbia, there are 9 government employees. Okay. Alberta and Ontario are tied. Okay. So it's the exact same number. For every 1,000 Albertans or Ontarians, is that what they're called? How many government employees are there? So for context, BC has 9.
Ooh.
But before we get to that, Adam, you want to tell us about a listing this week.
You know, we got a fantastic new listing. This one's amazing. Right downtown, your 1003 Pacific Street, unit 402. This, of course, for people in the know, is C-Star, built by Boza. Love this building. Concrete high-rise right at the foot of the Burrard Street Bridge, right across the street from the seawall. Fully renovated. This is what I love about this unit. It's 726 square feet for a one bed. And it's a corner unit. So this is like how one beds should be built. It's got a den. It's got a solarium. It's got a huge living space, open kitchen, no expense spared, completely renovated. Like I said, building's great. Comes with a parking stall, exercise center, guest suite, just everything you absolutely need. And what a great location. This is available on our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, and listed at $679.9. So Matt, now let's get back to it. I'm going to guess that...
I usually give you multiple choice here. Three. So there's 3 government employees for every 1,000.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go 3.
You're a little light, Adam. It's 5.5. So I would have, if you would have said 5, I would have gave it to you. If you would have said six, I would have given it to you. So you basically had two chances, struck out. But isn't that kind of wild? In Ontario, for every 1,000 people, there's 5.5 government employees. In Alberta, the same. In BC, we have 9, which is feels a bit bloated.
So almost double. Wow. Well, anyways, it's an interesting budget. I think there's a theme here with the government and its relationship with the real estate industry and related services. And I think people will be able to spot it after this conversation. So maybe we should cut to our conversation with Trevor Hargreaves.
Enjoy.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E. condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown, and we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakland.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much, and we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, so we're here with Trevor Hargreaves. He's the Senior VP of Government Relations and Marketing and Communications at BCREA, or the British Columbia Real Estate Association. Past guest, fan favorite. Welcome back, Trevor. Thanks for taking the time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Well, Trevor, we asked you back on because, was it last week, the BC budget dropped. And I think you guys have been running off your feet, but you've unpacked it. You've thought about it. You've discussed it. You have some critiques, as I understand. Maybe we'll just start with some general thoughts on the provincial budget that was released last week.
Yeah, I mean, generally, let's look at it from a macro scale. The province is broke. We got real problems there at the end of the day. You have ministries with projects they can't afford to fulfill. Under the NDP years in power, public service has totally ballooned. You see the premier, he takes a lot of heat because when he came in to the province, you know, we had a sizable surplus and he willfully spent that down. But what you didn't know was coming was Trump. You know, you really can't calculate these major black swan events that can transpire. And so our fortunes have really shifted, I think, nationally and economically. And so we have a lot of worst case scenarios that have shown their head within this province. And so the province is really reeling, trying to figure out, how do we move forwards? How do we continue to provide the vital services that we need to provide? And then how do we trim our deficits at the same time? So what we've seen is what I suppose they see as the best path forwards. I think you see a lot of people in the BC business community really questioning whether these are the most pragmatic moves under such financial crisis situations.
It always seems at odds. So Trevor, it's occurred to me over the years, we've got a housing crisis happening in the Lower Mainland and in the province. And we continue to treat housing development as a revenue source. Can you talk a little bit about the budget philosophy around housing?
Yeah, I think one of the really majorly concerning leverage points when it comes to the province is the fact that, you know, so much of housing, so much of the cost of housing, the process of housing, building housing, selling housing, all of it makes up such a huge amount of the provincial budget. And so the taxation that they are making, they're so overly dependent on. And it's an easy fix for them in many ways. Once they're really drawing short on funds, they tend to craft new taxes and leverage the sector higher. So that's been a traditional situation. you know, we've seen that in strong economic conditions, let alone weak economic conditions. I think that where it's really critical right now is that what's just come out of this budget, obviously, and we'll unpack that momentarily, you have a bunch of tax increases to the housing sector, but you're hitting the sector at a time where it's at a particular low. So, you know, and this is feedback really that came, there was a big press conference yesterday held by the Vancouver Board of Trade, where you had a lot of different sectors all coming together saying like, enough is enough. Like, we can't shoulder additional tax increases. We're all really struggling here. And I think particularly in the development sector, when it comes to housing, it's really at a crisis point. So you start layering additional new taxes, it's a bit tone deaf, right? You're putting taxes in that are in turn going to stagnate the creation of new homes and therefore home sales. So then you're going to get less tax revenue, which is then going to make the province poorer. Therefore, they have to leverage increased taxes to make up for the shortfall. So it starts to become this dog chasing its tail situation. And I think that's very much the spiral we're in right now. And for the size of the deficits, these aren't fixes. You know, you're not putting these taxes into place so that you're balancing a budget. You're still drawing multi-billions of dollars in deficit. And so none of this is a fix. It's just a, you know, making a bad situation even worse.
Before we actually drill down to exactly what those taxes on building homes are, what they look like, I'm just curious on your take, Trevor, because you talk to a lot of people in government, out of government. I guess that's kind of the network you're in. Do you think it's just a lack of imagination, or is it ideological? What is going on where, you know, I think any layperson would see there's been kind of years of what appears to be strangling in industry. And at this point, when, you know, they're gasping for breath, it's like, okay, now I'm going to use my heel. What's your take on why this occurred?
A good question. And it's certainly one I spend a lot of time asking myself. I think that when it comes down to the NDP, and so when we talk about this, you really need to look at the party in power. And so we've got provincial NDP. Who are the NDP traditionally out there fighting for? They're really trying to be the voice of the struggling British Columbian, right? They want to make sure that there's social provision for people that don't have it. They want to make sure, you know, people that really need various services have those services. That's sort of like a core NDP area of function. Then they take over the broad government, and then in government, you know, you're then needing to focus on everyone. And then now we found ourselves in this circumstance, certainly in this Trumpian environment, where they're really having to kind of do a bit of a 180 and suddenly find themselves focusing much more on economic expansion and development of business and things traditionally that their opposition parties would focus in. So I think they find themselves in a bit of a split personality, frankly, because you're trying to balance your budget. And I think the real challenge they have is, in order to really, truly do that, to effectively do that, you are going to have to totally gut social provision across this province. Like it or don't like it, that means major cuts in healthcare, major cuts in every social provided service right across the province. Now, who is their voter base? And I think the real challenge is, with any political party, are you making the decisions as a leader to solve a problem? Or are you making decisions to also make sure you're still getting reelected? And so I think my personal take on this, I think they've come out with a budget where they're trying, they've already got a lot of people criticizing them on a lot of different sides, and they don't want to take any sort of political suicide move. And so they're trying to still maintain the social provision, which is why we're nowhere near balanced books, but they're also then trying to raise taxes and kind of lean towards the business sector while also simultaneously trying to build the business sector. So they're running in circles. They really, I think, struggle right now with clear focus. And frankly, they're being criticized on all sides because, you know, they're fast-tracking environmental approvals to build out new mining projects, for example. And so you have the environmentalists criticizing them for making moves like that. They're simultaneously being criticized for making taxation changes that then challenge the projects that they're trying to create. And so they don't have a lot of friends right now because they're really not going hard in any one clear direction. And it's got to be a tremendous challenge for the premier and for his whole team.
Have you thought about what an ideal housing budget could have looked like?
But maybe, Adam, before we get to that, can we just spell out exactly the taxes that were put in place? Like, what were, for people who kind of have vaguely been following along, what were the taxes, and then what would be ideal?
No, I'll sort of, you know, I'll end on the most sort of critical one, but it starts with the Northern and Rural Homeowner Benefit is being repealed. So, you know, again, these are not major hits. They're smaller taxation measures, but they're fairly sizable. They've moved forwards with school tax increases, which again can have quite a sizable ramification within Metro Vancouver, where property is very expensive. You know, those are costs that are going to end up getting trickled down to the end buyer. You have spec and vacancy tax has been boosted up to 4% for foreign home buyers at a time where, again, we're really struggling within this economy trying to sell houses. We want to be attracting foreign business and foreign ownership. And simultaneously, we're further taxing foreign investment when it comes to anyone investing in property within the province. But the one that's really set everybody up in arms and what's really triggered off a lot of the BC business community is around PST, because they raised the PST in terms of taking the scope of PST and having it apply in a whole bunch of different directions with no consultation to anyone within the business sector. So nobody saw this coming. As previously mentioned, you know, it's not just housing. I think we're in a downturn economy, so you have a lot of sectors really hurting. But within housing particularly, PST is now going to apply to a whole host of ancillary services that it never used to previously. That's going to add to the cost of building housing. That's going to challenge developments further. That's on the end of real estate specifically. That's going to cost brokerages. It heavily affects the commercial sector, because PST is now going to qualify in areas that it didn't within the commercial sector. And it's really just going to be challenging and further lowering the bottom line in a sector that's having a hard time. So the lack of consultation on this, and the fact that you're making promises around all of these sort of housing targets and incentivization, and we're gonna build, we're gonna get this done. We're already in a point where we're in a crisis. The crisis pre-budget was openly there. Housing starts are at an absolute standstill across the province. And now you take steps like this to take a crisis and make it worse. And so there's just a lot of head shaking going on, going like, what is the real strategy here on the back end? What are you trying to achieve? Because you let things go in this direction within this sector, it's just going to cause a whole host of new problems.
I just want to unpack the PST just for anyone listening. You know, you mentioned commercial real estate, for instance, but it impacts people across the board in terms of in the real estate world. Like, is this just collecting PST? Like, can you spell out exactly how this impacts the business community, but also just people that are listening? Like, why does this matter? Is this just an extra percent I'm paying, or who pays, or what's the story?
Well, basically, in a bunch of different areas that were previously PST exempt, they are no longer exempt. And so you're going to be paying sizable PST for a whole variety of services that, you know, accounting services, legal services, I mean, commercial being a sizable one, and sizable commercial transactions, that's sizable amounts of money. And so, you know, this is already a sector that's in a downturn. It's already a sector that's really struggling. You're just further challenging the bottom line at the end of the day. And so that's a real concern in terms of the prosperity of the sector and how we move forwards. It's got the commercial sector just up in arms, and rightly so.
You know, I'm thinking about, like, what do you think the strategy for the speculation and vacancy tax increase? I think about it like, you know, surprisingly, and this might be surprising for some people, but where I see this happening now or becoming an issue in BC is mostly when people are trying to rent out their home or their condo and they can't rent it for a period of time, and they're getting incredibly stressed out about hitting that 6-mark period, even with rental cuts now that the vacancy rate has increased and rents have come down. It seems like this is impacting local people in a big way. Is that your take?
It's an interesting one. It's too bad we don't have Brendan Ogmanson, who I know has been on this show many times. If you ever bring up this subject, his head starts to spin around and steam starts to come out of his and this tax. Because none of the markers show that that's a applicable tax that's doing anything for affordability, right? The financial metrics don't show it. But if you ever talk to the NDP, it's one of those taxes, like they love to tout it as a very successful measure. And you're right, like in this downturn economy, and I've heard some personal stories of people individually struggling with that. That's really separate from this PST announcement, or sorry, with this budget announcement, because where they're raising it, it's applying to foreign home buyers, not to domestic home buyers.
Okay.
So changes for foreign investors. But again, that just seems tone deaf because we're at a time where we need foreign investment. And when you're doing this, you're discouraging investment in property, but you're also, that has the tack on of other investment that you're further discouraging. And Canada is at a point, particularly BC, we need to be an open door, especially being on the Pacific Rim. We want to be opening to business. We want to be bringing in investment. We want to be encouraging it, not, you know, going for lazy tax categories that we feel we can boost simply to shore up our revenues. It's a challenge because I think a really common feeling is that decisions are being made that are helping level off our bottom line. But even when I'm saying that, again, we don't have balanced books. They're $13.5 billion deficit. So it's not like any of this is getting us any major fix. But decisions are being made that are beneficial to the provincial economy at a time where the best way you can strengthen the provincial economy is to be building our economic infrastructure. And that means foreign investment at the end of the day. So this one's a bit of a tone deaf scenario, but in general, and to your question, that tax, it applies to so few numbers of homes. It's not moving the dial. It's not creating a whole bunch of new homes that people can move into. It's not helping restore affordability. It's not a measure that's getting the job done in any way. And it's one of those ones where previously when we've put out calls around tax reform, and my own personal opinion, they would be best to just repeal the tax altogether.
It strikes me, and this is going down a rabbit hole, but it's kind of funny to Adam's point, and I know it's not part of the BC budget, but when the economy's thriving and you have properties that you're potentially going to rent out, you can rent them easy, you know, nothing sits vacant. So the fact that everybody's starting to worry about this tax is a signal of, you know, the tax comes into effect and potentially actually costs people money and potentially raises funds for the government at a time where the economy is not thriving because you're like hamstrung, you know? It's like, man, the conditions have deteriorated to such a point that, you know, I have this thing sitting vacant for 6 months, even though I'm desperately trying to rent it. It's just a sign of the times, I guess, that the economy is not doing very well.
And I think it falls to our sector and, you know, right through my office and a lot of the other government relations people to really be getting that message across to government, because I sometimes get the sense that they talk about challenging economic conditions, but on the ground, they don't see just how bad it is. They don't know just how much small business is struggling. They don't know how stagnant the economy is. And I mean, obviously they have a sense, but I think it can be a real challenge because for us, when we're building out our initiatives and what are we trying to convince government of and what are we recommending for the best health of the sector? Well, tax reform would be one of the first. You want to lower the price of houses? Well, vastly decrease the multiple layers of taxation that are currently existent. But of course, how do you make a recommendation like that, even when it's economically sound, at a time where you have a $13.5 billion deficit? It's troubling times in this country, and it's trying to figure out how do they get back to balanced books. It's going to take some major structural shifts.
Trevor, we just actually had Brad West, Mayor Brad West, on from Port Coquitlam. And one of his points was that when it comes to housing, the province just doesn't actually listen. Is that your perspective? Like, do you feel like that they're like it's clear from talking to people in the industry, including, you know, mayors of certain municipalities, that there hasn't been a lot of great communication or consultation around policy and reform. Is that your take? Or like, can you talk about maybe how the province has engaged housing?
I'll take a minute to actually give a compliment to a politician in this interview. But, you know, Mayor Brad West is a really good man. You know, I think he really wants the best for his town. He really wants the best for his constituents. And he really wants the best for this province. And I think he's absolutely right. I think he struggles on the municipal side. It's something really interesting to see where the EB administration, since they've come in, you know, there used to be kind of this provincial attitude of we can't tell municipalities how to live. they've certainly made those changes in terms of trying to put forward blanket new legislation, zoning bylaws, housing targets. They haven't been shy. And I understand that. Desperate times, desperate measures. Those aggressive stances in the right circumstances are a good idea. But I think you're right. I think this and I think he's right. This provincial government have a really hard time adequately consulting. They really, in my mind, truly don't quite get what that means. And so we'll have responses where we'll say, well, we weren't adequately consulted on this. They'll say, oh, yes, you were. Like we asked you those three questions. You know, you were part of a group where you had a couple that, you know, that's not adequate consultation. Thorough, adequate consultation to begin with is decide your policy collectively, because a few policy people working for the provincial government, don't leave it to them to choose the direction. Like, why are you not actively working with the experts within the private sector who frankly know a lot more about the various policy directions, the what's good, the bad, innovative new ideas, things to watch out for? Start working as a collective group, not sort of hived off within the provincial government. And so we see time and time again, legislation that's announced quickly, it's announced hastily, it's implemented quickly, it hasn't been thoroughly vetted. Things are announced and then they have to be changed because there wasn't enough advanced consultation. And it's, you know, to echo his frustration, we're often very much running on the same speaking points, he and I. He's speaking from the municipal side, me speaking from the private business side, but none of that is necessary. If you would slow down and get the right people working together collaboratively, you'd come out with stronger outcomes. And I think for him as the head of a municipality, you know, if you're trying to dictate housing targets and dictate processes, that's fine. But one of the real frustrations at the municipal level is the fact that the province tends to treat all municipalities like they're the same. And of course, your pressures, be you big or small or tourism oriented or economically diverse or remote, you know, communities have all different challenges. And smart legislation and smart policy is going to recognize that and provide exemptions where necessary. And, you know, I get it that there's pressure around trying to restore affordability, but doing things without doing your homework and hasty legislation, it's not the solution.
Trevor, we are going to get back to Adam's original question about what you would change or what you would have suggested in terms of housing policy in the budget if you were consulted. But one thing that just strikes me is, even I think before he was elected, or maybe right when he was elected on the show, somebody said he's like a bull in a china shop. And that's kind of what you're describing still. They have, the provincial government, they have had to walk back a number of policies that they implement, right? Because they implement them so quick and it's like, oh my God, this actually doesn't even make sense. Is there anything in this budget that you think, hey, maybe the commercial real estate sector, whatever, there's the type of feedback they're getting. Do you see any of this being walked back or is this here to stay?
It was interesting yesterday because, as I mentioned earlier on, the Vancouver Board of Trade held a press conference with all these, you know, leaders of business from across the province, all together, all in the room, all speaking as a united coalition going, do not move forwards with these changes to PST. Very hard hitting, you know, all of, or almost all of Vancouver's media were present. I saw on CBC in the evening, EB was questioned and he dismissed it right out of hand. Like, no, like that's a non-starter. We're not making that change. And it's interesting to see, like they're in very challenging times, but he seems quite willing to double down on the leadership decisions that he makes. So do I see these things being repealed? Potentially. Do I see them being repealed under this government? Not very likely. And I mean, they're taking such a universal criticism from so many different areas around this budget. You can pick almost any line item and somebody is saying, hey, that was a mistake.
And, you know, this makes me, you mentioned the CBC. I was listening to the CBC maybe 3 months ago, and I feel like a lot of people are kind of checked out of provincial politics in a way that's unfortunate, and probably myself included. But one thing that came out of, they have that political one night of the week, you know, on the drive home, they have this political panel. And somebody on the political panel said they don't see EB being the premier by the end of 2026. And that struck me, because I feel like we're in kind of an echo chamber potentially of disgruntled people, but this is a CBC. So when you say another government, you know, and we're getting to the end question before the end of this conversation. How does this play out politically for the NDP? And is there another government in place sooner than later?
There's a broad question for you. Yeah, I mean, I have the benefit in 2 weeks. We have our yearly government relations conference that we host in Victoria, where realtors from across the province who work for government relations committees, or I should say volunteer on the committees, representing the 8 regional boards. They all come out, they all meet. We spend time hearing presentations and doing some onstage interactions with all the heads of all the provincial parties. And then they go out there and they're actually like meeting with government and talking about critical issues. And I can tell you, we've had to do a major pivot building in taxation, you know, into our speaking points for this just within recent days. But yeah, I'll be on stage with EBS actually asking him questions in 2 weeks. And I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure out what are the best questions. Where do I go on this one? You know, like what an interesting time to have the discussions. Okay, so let's talk about the political landscape in this province. You've got 3 major parties. We'll start with the Greens. You've got Emily Lowen as the new found leader. And I don't know how much you've followed the direction that she's taken things in. As leaders go, she's young, you know, in her mid-20s. She has a very activist-oriented background. She's very pro a lot of the positions that the NDP have had to pivot away from as they're trying to build out the environment, as they're trying to build out the economy. So obviously they're very pro-environment and they're very pro-union. So she's made the decision to cease the agreement with the NDP in recent weeks, which, you know, kind of untethers them to be a ever more a strong vocal critic of things that the NDP are doing. So that really doesn't help. So that's a real challenge to the NDP moving forwards. And of course, we've already talked about the fact that the NDP are finding themselves in a position where they're having to desperately try to grow our economy in light of our cross-border trade issues. So they're spending a lot of time endeavoring in things around economic growth that are not their traditional area of focus. That would normally be the opposition party. And so that alone creates like this strange tension in terms of their traditional supporters. And then, of course, the major question, I think, being the BC Conservatives and what's the state of the BC Conservatives. Their leader, John Rustad, is no longer their leader. So right now there's, a few different names kind of falling into the hat, pushing for leadership of that party and ever more trying to get organized. I think certainly they've had a rough start when you start a party like that, because it can attract the odd far right opinion. We've certainly seen a little bit of that within the party, which doesn't help the overall reputation of the party. And now you don't have a leader, right? So it's a challenging time as it tries to find its own voice, but that party is very economically focused and we are very economically challenged. So when trying to figure, you know, you have a party for the times, there's always that kind of scenario. And even the best leaders have been removed from government when the climate economically has changed. Look at World War II and Churchill. You know, Churchill guides England through World War II and then immediately is removed from office. You know, I think in the direction we're going in desperate economic times, you need to have a government that's as economically focused as possible. I think the Conservatives are gearing up. I think you're going to see them give the NDP a good run for their money in the months to come when we next have an election. In terms of prediction, it's way too early to say. I will simply say that I think EB has very challenging times ahead for his own leadership and for his party, because when you're being criticized all around you from everyone, from literally every major file and special interest group that you have, they all have interests that they feel are not being met. You know, it makes the sustainability of leadership very difficult. So again, everything is, look at all of our lives post-COVID. You thought COVID was weird enough and it couldn't get any weirder. Every 6 months, it's a new and strange landscape. So it's hard to speak ahead a year, but I think this government really has some challenges ahead of them.
Do you have, on that note of several people vying for the leadership of the Conservative Party, do you have a candidate or a potential candidate that you're kind of watching and hopeful about?
Making me come out publicly on that one? I'll tell you why. I'm going to sort of put voice in his favor. When we were dealing with the cooling off period which has, you know, since been branded as the HBRP, still remains, you know, still, it's still in action. It's still legislated. Certainly something that still sticks up my craw as one of the like most hasty created under-researched policies that were put into place. That was when Selena Robinson was housing minister at the time. That went into debate in the Ledge, and the BC Liberals were still a party. Peter Miliband stood up and just absolutely, I thought, eloquently defended our sector in terms of where is your research? Where is your data? Why are you making a decision like this? And do you understand the potential ramifications it can have? And I've watched him. I mean, I knew him previously. I've watched him afterwards. But I think that as a politician, he's had a lot of time to mature, get a lot of experience under his belt. He's spent a lot of time, you know, sort of with a variety of roles in a variety of sectors at this point in time as a politician. And I think moving forwards, when it comes to housing and when it comes to our sector, I think we would be well represented with him as a leader, just being a knowing leader that understands the business pragmatics of our sector. So speaking personally, I'm certainly watching where he goes, what his messaging is, and what's next within that party. Now, I say that we're being in my job. I try to be as politically neutral as possible. I'm really paying attention to all three of these parties at any given time. And, you know, I'm watching with fascination the work that Emily Lowen is doing on the Greens and where she's sort of steering a younger, new energy. And then I'm watching with fascination how EB is handling all of these files that are right before him now as a somewhat mature government. It's a very interesting landscape within this province because it's just so diversified from Green to NDP to BC Conservative. And of course, there's also that sort of fourth volatility aspect of, could you potentially have a fourth new party rise from the ashes of the Liberals, which could then mean Conservatives cross over, which that's totally just me speculating, but certainly that's always talked about in the, you know, in the quiet political circles as well, where there's potential for that to happen. You already have the BC Centre Party and you have other parties like trying to kind of establish themselves as new parties. So again, there's a bunch of months ahead of us here before an election. So there's anything could happen.
It would be nice to just have a party that was like the adult in the room party, you know, where you don't have to worry about a wing nut saying something crazy or a party imploding every 3 months or whatever it is. You know, just people that have their stuff together, if that makes sense, and can run a party that actually can take this province in the right direction.
Well, I'll tell you what I would like to see, because I think one of the real problems in this modern world, and social media does not help, but we're all just increasingly polarized, right? You're way to the left, you're way to the right. You know, most people, all they really want is a centrist party. We're Canadian. What do we want? We want to be able to go to the doctor. We want to go to the dentist. We want a military to defend us. We want to have good jobs. We want to have safe children, right? Like none of it's brain surgery. As we find ourselves in these really challenged times in this province, and using the NDP as an example, when they're having to pivot and move towards business expansion, I would like to see something that used to happen in years past, but you never see it anymore. Why don't you just work collaboratively with the opposition party? Why don't you draw from the strengths of every elected politician that you have in this province? Who cares? Who cares what party you're from? The time of polarization is past. Like, we're all Canadians and we're all British Columbians. Just get the job done. And personally, like, I think that's the inspiring leadership I would like to see. It's time for a bit of a future vision that's less about getting elected and more about truly drawing upon the expertise that exists in the Ledge to get the job done.
So with that said, Trevor, going back to Adam's original question a half hour ago about how things could have been done differently with this budget in relation to housing, if they had drawn on other expertise from other parties, from the sector, what would you have done different? And how would that have helped spur some recovery here in the housing sector?
It's a challenge when you're seeing deficits the size that they are, right? You're not talking about $2 billion, you're talking $13.5 billion. That's a whole lot of money. And as I mentioned, you know, government has ballooned under the NDP administration. It's like 30% or so larger than it was. So you've had sizable gains there. To their credit, they've announced they're reducing, I think, 15,000 government employees over a number of years. That's the direction that they've announced they're going in. The problem, of course, even there, though, like it's still too little too late. You're still drawing these huge deficits in the meantime. So I think on the structural side of things, and this was something that was echoed in that Vancouver Board of Trade yesterday, that this government has a spending problem. And you know, healthcare is ever more expensive. All of these various provisions that we've gotten used to as Canadians have become more and more expensive. We're in desperate times. And so I think to truly reduce that budget, you would have to do very politically unpopular moves. As I said, like drastically reducing in a variety of structural areas so that your actual hard costs are dramatically lower. In terms of our sector and how can you best treat our sector? Well, number one, taxation is a no-go. Like you should not be moving forward with any additional taxes. Like it's not fair to be hitting upon us harder to make up for government shortfalls. We're already, I think, arguably as a sector, way, way, way overtaxed. If you had outside consultation to this, I think you would be recognizing the dire straits that the development sector is in, because there is major danger if they don't get on top of this very quickly and they don't get housing starts back on track. Because if you let things continue to stagnate and new builds come to a virtual standstill, we'll skip ahead 3 to 5 years. You're going to suddenly find yourself having a drought of new accommodation, right? You're not going to have these new builds that people need. So now you've kind of gone back to these sort of this 2010 timeline. You've recreated similar conditions where you don't have enough new housing hitting the market and demand is greatly outpacing availability. So what's going to be the outcome of that? It's going to significantly drive up house prices. And why? Because we've just sat on our hands watching this situation unfold. So, you know, the deficit of the province aside, I think the real challenge here is to how do you get developers comfortably moving forwards in projects again? And that's where the government needs to put its focus. And I think tax incentivization, you can be looking at a lot of different ways where the government can be working, recognizing the challenged conditions, looking at the various challenges that the developers are having and addressing them one by one to be getting them moving forwards. And that's either on market or non-market housing. But either way, start focusing on projects and get this stuff moving, because right now it's sitting in a standstill and the federal government are aware of it and the provincial government are aware of it. Both of them have stated huge housing targets. If they're pushed in interviews, they keep saying like, no, we're going to meet these targets, yet nothing is being built. So put the focus where it needs to be and just recognize that that is the driver of so much in this economy. And so if they're going to promise all these housing starts, they need to start moving and getting that stuff built.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there. But we do have this segment called The Five Wire. Sometimes with guests that we have on all the time, Trevor, we don't do The Five Wire. With you specifically, we will do The Five Wire because I feel like we've had some past answers. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Yeah. That's always a high note of guesting on your show.
One book you would recommend that you've read recently?
It's related to film, but I tend to do deep dives in both film and literature and kind of it merges sometimes. So the 1970s director, Sam Peckinpah, I've been very obsessed with him and his movies in recent weeks. And I recently just bought a great biography that has one of the best names of a book I've ever read. And the biography is If They Move, Kill Them, which is great. He's had a very like flamboyant and interesting life. His filmography is incredible. And you know, it's his films that kind of earmarked that term. So there's my book answer.
Question.
Don't know. Hold on, Adam. I just need to, for people who don't know Sam Peckinpah's movies, one or two that people might recognize.
He made the movie Getaway, if you've ever seen that one, which is a old Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw, kind of a crime flick. I think that's where Quentin Tarantino got the idea of dressing people in those black suits. You know, I think it comes from that film. He did a great old movie in the 70s with Kris Kristofferson and again, Ally McGraw called Convoy that started that whole like trucker movie phase in the 70s, which is actually one of my favorite movies. That's what kind of drew me into paying more attention to his overall film. So that's two of my real favorites right there. He also made the original Billy the Kid movie, if you've ever seen that one. It's like 3 hours long, but it's a really interesting Western where you can't quite tell if the good guys are good or the bad guys are bad. Everybody's kind of on the same playing field.
I think we've only seen Young Guns about 35 times. So I haven't seen the original, though.
Sophisticated. It's a nuanced take as well.
It's funny when you watch Young Guns, because or when you watch this one I'm talking about, it has all these references of same names and the Regulators and all these kind of like similar aspects that we all remember from our childhood, but it's all part of the original story. So thank you, Young Guns, for the early Western education.
No kidding.
And for the beginning of that Warren G song, which very few people know as well. So here,
unrelated, they're making a third Young Guns movie, except it should be called Old Guns. But they're all back. Like Emilio Estevez and the rest of them, they're all going to be back on the show. So
really,
Charlie Sheen dies, so he won't be back. But Dermot Mulroney, I wonder if he's going to be back.
Very good, Dermot Mulroney.
Okay, question two.
Question number two. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life, Trevor?
I'm really trying to sleep more. That's my newest one. You know, trying to regulate my sleeping patterns. I still exist like I'm a teenager, and my mother's not there to tell me to go to bed half. Watching these idiot movies that I'm talking about. Yeah. Not good when you got 7 a.m. meetings.
Well, you know what? Number three, actually, this will work then. Something you've been binge watching, maybe not a Sam Peckinpah movie, but something else.
I've been going right back through the Jack Reacher series.
Are those good?
I guess I've watched it, but I've go by it all the time.
The first season in particular is quite entertaining, and all these kind of like spy action thriller / crime shows, like it's a good one. It kind of falls in a good gripping way. It's well edited, it's well shot. The guy that plays Reacher is a bit more gripping than Tom Cruise was, but it's worth the time on Prime.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. I just started watching the Daniel Craig Bond movies, which I had somehow missed, but really good. But maybe that's the next one. Question number four, Trevor, favorite band or music?
That's always a big question for me. I went last week to see the Sadies play live. Dallas Green from that band died 2 years ago. It was like their lead guitarist, but his brother is still playing the band. But it was a small show. It was at the Fox Cabaret. The Sadies put out an album with Gord Downie a few years ago. So anybody that has never heard of the Sadies, great album. I think it's called Conquering Sun. So it's not my favorite band of all bands, but it's certainly a band where I feel like it's a Canadian treasure. It's a band a lot of people don't know. They've been together for 30 years. They got a whole handful of albums. And as a sometime guitarist myself, I watch that band in awe. Like they play like nobody else in this country. So let's go with the Sadies. That's my answer.
It's a great one.
Adam's a sometimes guitarist as well. Last question for you, Trevor, and we appreciate your time. Something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has had a profound impact on your life since we've seen you last, 8-9 months maybe?
I'm just going to say this one because it relates to my Sam Peckinpah choice, but I bought this for a few hundred dollars off of Facebook Marketplace, but I bought an original 1972 film poster of The Getaway by Sam Peckinpah, and every time I look at it, I go, "Nice purchase." But when I see it hasn't been like that profound. It's not changing my world, but I'm certainly as an aesthetic addendum every day when I see
it, all the money. It's kind of awesome that it just the joy factor, though. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's awesome. Right? No one else likes it, but I like it. But you know, as long as you like your own purchases, it's all good.
Trevor, how can people find more about what you're up to and follow along?
Go and visit the advocacy section of BCREA's website, BC Real Estate Association. Otherwise, look around on the media sphere. We're always out there commenting and trying to stay relevant in all of these various things that are being announced by government. And, you know, I think in a discussion like today where we're talking about things, it almost sounds like we're hostile to government. I could certainly be frustrated by their lack of consultation. I think they're trying their best. I think they need help from the likes of all of us. I'm always out there and you know, so is my full team, so is my CEO, trying to really best represent the voices of realtors when it comes to all of these issues and try to steer government back around the right path where we can get them to do so.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time, Trevor. And if you ever have the time, of course, we definitely would love to have you back. So
we'll see you during the next election or budget announcement.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Trevor Hargreaves from the BCREA.
Yes.
All things politics, communications, basically just really, really smart guy that we love to have on the show often as we can, Adam.
No kidding. No, it's a great team over there at BCREA. Tons of useful insights from today's conversation. If you want to hear more about anything in particular related to the real estate industry, please reach out. We do get a lot of emails. Have you guys covered this? Have you thought about covering this? But we're always open to new ideas. So if you have an idea for the show, reach out. Matt, what else do we have before we cut for the day?
What else do we have, Adam? Well, one thing that we failed to mention in the introduction is we've worked with hundreds of people from the podcast over the years who have reached out both to sell and to buy. And it has been one of the great pleasures of my career, Adam. One of the great pleasures of my career. So what I would like to say is we would love to work with more of you. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We have sellers resources there. We have buyers resources, but really we just like working with people who listen to the show. Some of the best people out there for sure. So that's what I wanted to say. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, or you could try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, everyone. And we're back here next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.